Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. The What to Read Next podcast helps you build a TBR of future favorite books. In each episode, Lori Amin interviews authors and book influencers to recommend books they loved for you to pick up today. If you're an avid reader, always looking for your next great read, then the show's for you. Hi, Juliet. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited. I love talking about books.
Oh, I'm so excited to chat with you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a native Californian, and I had sort of a circuitous route to become an author. I've always loved books, always loved reading, but I was an anthropologist for a while and then a social worker and worked as a waitress, put myself through school. And then I worked as an artist. Actually, I did like faux finishes when that was a big thing a while ago. Faux finishes and murals and portraits and stuff. And then I kind of backed my way into writing, and I've been writing for the last full time, probably for the last 15 years. And I really love it.
Oh my gosh. I love it. So what was the journey to get writing, getting your writing career, like figure out like, this is something you path you want to take and then going full time for it.
You know, it, I had my own, design company doing the painting, and with a partner, a business partner, and we would we worked on a lot of remodels and that sort of thing in San Francisco, because I live in Oakland. So San Francisco's right across the bridge. And at that time, all the rich people were in San Francisco. So that's who we painted for mostly. And you know, we were on these late night remodels because the painters would be like the last people on the scene. So often we wound up working in the middle of the night. And I remember there was one night and the two of us, we were working and it was like 2 or 3 in the morning. And we're in this mansion in Pacific Heights and it's supposed to be empty. And we both would have sworn we heard somebody, you know, walking overhead. And so then we sort of scoped it out and all, we couldn't find anybody, but we got ourselves real spooked. And I remember thinking at the time, because I used to read a lot of murder mysteries, and I remember thinking, this would be a great place for a murder or some sort of mysterious murder with the rich, you know, the rich owners and then maybe some of the workers or something. And then I think it was just on a lark. I wrote like the first chapter of a murder mystery that had a faux finisher like me, who was an ex art forger, which I'm not, but I love art forgery. I'm very interested in forgery and that sort of thing. And then I just wrote a first chapter just on a lark, and I sent it to my sister, who actually teaches history in Virginia. She's a professor, and she happened to be on sabbatical. And so she actually looked at it, but she didn't just look at it. She like tore it apart and said, no, do this, because she's a huge reader as well. And then we started writing a book together. So we collaborated, and our very first book was called Faint of Art. And it was part of the Art Lover Mystery series. And we wrote those books together. So that was really fun.
Oh my gosh, that's so much fun. So was it a cozy mystery or like?
It was, yeah. It's a cozy. It's called the Art Lover Mystery series. It was Faint of Art, Shooting Gallery, Brushwood Death, and Arsenic and Old Paint. There were four of them.
Yeah. I love this. So this podcast, I would tell you, it has a soft spot for cozy mysteries. It's my hidden gem popular things. I'm not a cozy mystery fan. I'm just learning about cozy mysteries, but somehow every so often I'll have a cozy mystery special edition and the numbers are like,
oh, is that right? Oh,
yeah. So it's kind of like random. Like,
oh, that's funny.
Because it's a really small niche market, but it has diehard fans and it's like long series.
It's true. I mean, that's one of the fun things about it is the fans there's a lot of interaction on my Facebook page. A lot of the readers who follow me there are often some of the Cozy Mystery fans, and they just check in a lot, and they're very active amongst themselves. They talk and give recommendations, and it's just really fun. It's a fun community as well. It's a fun writing community. Yeah. The Cozy Writers, we have a blast when we get together. So
that's so great. So now you're writing historical fiction. So the Paris Showroom. So what was the jump? Like, what made you decide to jump genres and like go into research about World War II?
You know, after the Art Lovers Mystery series that I was writing with my sister, she actually had to go back to work at a real job, unfortunately. And I still really had the bug, the writing bug, and I was still working my regular job. So, you know, it's a struggle to get everything done. Mm-hmm. But I then started writing a witchcraft mystery series. Ooh. Which is a cozy paranormal mystery. Mm-hmm. It's about a witch with a vintage clothing store in the Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. So that was a lot of fun. And that one got to be very popular. And then I wrote the Haunted Home Renovation series about someone who which is also cozy, but it's a home renovator who sees ghosts behind the walls. And then I spent a lot of time in France. My boyfriend's French, actually, and we spent a lot of time there. And so I thought, you know, what I should do is set a mystery series in France. Mm-hmm. So I had an idea for a mystery series that was about a locksmith in France. And there was a particular locksmith shop that I stumbled across one day, and I just in Paris, and I just fell in love with the guy there and all the locks and the keys. And I pitched it to my editor at Penguin, and she took it to her boss. And then she came back and she said, you know, we think this would be a better women's fiction than a mystery series, like a standalone women's fiction. And would you be interested in trying that? And I think, you know, as an author, it's really exciting to sort of push yourself to do a different kind of genre. And the mysteries are in some ways much more accessible, because in a mystery, you have a structure for a novel already. You have somebody has to die, and then there have to be lots of suspects, and then there has to be a motive. And, you know, there's a skeleton to build your novel on. And with the women's fiction, it's a much different sort of storyline and story arc, and it's a lot more interior usually, and a lot more about character development. And I just loved it. I just fell in love with that. So my first book was called The Paris Key, and it had a historical element, but it was more like, it was the main character who's an adult, and it was, the historical element was her mother's story. So just like 20 years earlier, or actually 40 years earlier. and then I went on to write, I guess, 4 or 5 more books that are set in France, in different parts of France. And a couple of them there's a World War I element, but they were all dual timeline. So contemporary story and then historical. And the Paris Showroom, and I just got my books, so it's always fun to have the actual books. Yay. Paris Showroom is my very first purely historical novel. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I was originally, because I had done the dueling timelines, and I really enjoy doing that as an author, because I feel like each timeline kind of melds into the other and then compels the other. And so I really like that as a story. But in the Paris Showroom, there was so much going on that I felt like it would be way too much to try to do 2 timelines. So mm-hmm. it is told from 2 different perspectives. It's told from the perspective of the mother who is imprisoned in a Nazi prison camp in Paris, and her daughter who and they've been estranged. Her daughter has just turned 21 and who lives with her grandparents who are cooperating with the Nazis. So it's the two stories from, but about the same timeline.
Mm-hmm. And so what was the research? Well, actually, what was the source of inspiration? Like, what led you to this particular part of the story? Because it's unique enough, you know, when we're thinking about Occupy France and Occupy, like, and thinking about the fashion and the what, you know, maintaining art, you know, well, it was occupied France. Like, what was the sort of, like, you know, what was the sort of narration? Was it a story? Was it a real life? Like, what led you to the story?
You know, it was a couple of things actually that led me to the story. First off was something that ultimately it's not a huge part of this book, but it was a big inspiration for the book, was fan making. I'm really interested in the art of making fans. And I just get like little bees in my bonnet about certain things. And for some reason I was just so interested in how fans were made and the history of fans. And there were fans in Asia, of course, and then there are fans in Europe. And then about the feathers, that a lot of the fans in Europe were made with feathers, and they're the showy fans, the ones that people use in nightclub reviews and stuff. And those feathers then became endangered. And so that was a whole storyline that really has almost no place in this book. It's except that the main character, the mother, is a fan maker along with her her father. So they make fans for the couture, the very fancy houses. And Capucine, that's the name of the mother in the book, Capucine uses that fact and her knowledge of the fashionable houses in Paris to sort of bargain her way into staying in a Nazi prison camp in Paris rather than be shipped off to Auschwitz. And a lot of the people, and so the other thing that I was so intrigued by that really fostered this novel was the fact that there were Nazi prison camps in downtown Paris. And I had never realized that. I never heard about that. There were three of them, and the Le Vuitton department store was by far the largest. There were over 700 prisoners kept there. The other two, Bassano and Austerlitz, were much smaller, but all of them really catered to the Nazi elite, who had a real hunger for all things, you know, artistic Parisian things. They really had a hunger for that, and it's part of the weirdness of that time period. And I think it's one of the reasons why there are so many books and movies made about World War II, because it was such an odd thing. The occupation, the German occupation of France, was so odd, because on the one hand, the Nazis in particular really revered a lot about Parisian culture and French culture in general, but Parisian especially. But then they also were willing to destroy it. So it's such an odd juxtaposition. And in the book, Capucine is not Jewish. And I think most people know that not only Jews were arrested by the Nazis. She's accused of being a communist, and that's why she's imprisoned. But I was just so interested in how these people lived and who they were, and you know, the fact that they lived in a department store, which just for some reason seems so odd to be held prisoner in a department store.
So odd, but at the same time, like thinking about like, you know, like the world today, like people are even bomb shelters in Ukraine, right, are subway stations, like, you know, so you just don't know. But it's like, imagine this world is Occupy, like we're your world is an upended, and then being stuck in a department store doing work, you know?
Exactly. I mean, it's so interesting because obviously the whole Ukraine situation wasn't happening when I was writing the book, but now the book seems so kind of relevant in terms of that, just what it is to actually live with occupiers and try to survive. And everyone's trying to survive, trying to get enough food. You know, that's the thing about wars that I'm interested in writing about. I'm not interested in military history and that sort of thing, but I'm very interested in the day-to-day, how people live, how they get enough food, how they go to the bathroom, like, you know, basic stuff, right? Do they get to shower? Do they get, I don't know, do you pay taxes when you're like living in under an occupant? Like, how does it all work, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm really interested in.
Yeah, it's basically Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Are your basic needs are met? And you know, like what happens, what kind of conflict it creates, like what kind of decisions do you make because your basic needs are not being met?
Right, exactly.
And that can make a really compelling story because you're like, okay, putting yourself in that shoes, like will you do what the character's doing, or how will you approach it differently and stuff like that? And as a reader, it seems like it's something really captivating.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
All right, so let's switch things around. So, what kind of genre do you gravitate when it comes to reading?
You know, it's I am all over the map. I really am all over the map. I read a lot of nonfiction, especially when I'm doing research. And I was, as I mentioned, I studied anthropology for a long time. So I'm very interested in social sciences and history, but history from kind of a very social sciencey point of view. But in terms of my fiction, I do read a lot of cozy mystery. We were talking about cozy earlier. I enjoy reading my friends' books and I enjoy other mysteries, like grittier mysteries as well. I personally have never been able to write a gritty mystery because I can't live that long with the ugliness, but I can live long enough to read a book about that. But then I like a lot of right now I'm reading Mexican Gothic, which I'm sure everybody's heard of that. I'm kind of behind, so like, you know, that was a hot book a while ago and I'm reading that one. That's really fun. I just read do you know Gigi Pandian? She wrote a book called Under Lock and Skeleton Key, which is a mystery, but really, really fun, really fun. Fun, and it's a like a locked room mystery, like how could that have happened? And Gigi's really talented and she's a good friend. So I just read her book. And yeah, Tana French. I love Tana French, anything by Tana French. Richard Russo was one of my favorites as well. Yeah, I'm kind of all over the map, obviously.
Well, yes, but you seem to have like some sort of mystery. Would you like do historical mystery at some point? Was that something that you like, maybe later on,
I'm actually yeah, I think it would be really interesting. Although I have to say, doing a historical novel is so much work. And of course it is, but it's just so much research. They're all every little tidbit, you know, it's like you know, one of them that stumped me, I must have spent 3 days on whether they had hair dye. Because I wanted to use a scene where a character has to dye her hair. And I was like, did they have hair dye? And they did. They had the L'Oreal hair dye that comes out of Paris. But Hitler declared it to be, I don't know, vanity or something. And he said that women shouldn't dye their hair. So it wasn't available in stores, although it was in the black market,
Was gonna
apparently.
say it was in the black market,
Yes, yeah, but anyway, it's interesting. And then there were these substitutes for hair dyes that were being used, and that's actually in the book. What I used is they used for a dark hair dye, they used black walnut.
probably.
You know, I don't know if anyone's ever opened a black walnut, but it stains your hands. I've opened them because they're native to this area in California, and they'll stain your hands for a good, you know, week or so. It's like like putting henna on your hands, probably. So, yeah.
Oh, this is so exciting. Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, because I'm actually like, I've been reading some Victorian historical
Oh,
mysteries, and they're kind of like fun. They're like downstairs, upstairs, very, very English downtown Abbey, and it's like, the downstairs trying to like solve the mystery of the whatever murder that happened,
Yeah, it's fun.
It
I
is
think it could
fun.
be really fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's a nice little escape,
It is. Yeah.
Awesome. So tell us where you can find you online.
It's julietblackwell.net or dot com. I think I've got all of them. I think I even have dot org. So it's just Juliet Blackwell. And then I'm also on Twitter at Juliet Blackwell Author and also Facebook, Juliet Blackwell Author. And I'm on Instagram, although I don't post as often as I should, but I am there. So,
Okay. Thank
yeah.
you, Julia, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so much fun.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. For a list of books mentioned and other romance recommendations, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com. The What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Please visit frolic.media/podcast to discover new shows to tune in. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.